Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Fresh from the Field. I'm your host, Ken Nelson. And on today's episode, we're talking about Michigan soil. And on the podcast today, I have Carl Hausler, who is a retired soil scientist. How are you doing today, Carl?
I'm doing great.
Oh, nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. Thank you for coming on. And so, Carl, first, what was your involvement with picking our state soil? And so it's the Kalkaska sand. Did I say that correctly?
Yes. Yeah, the level of which Kalkaska sand is at in the nomenclature is a soil series, and it typically has a name that's a geographical place near where it was first established. And then series is the level of soil that basically is affects the way that soil is used or the outcomes from using that soil. So it's at that level, which is fairly low in the process. There's 12 soil orders at the top end, and all of those don't occur in Michigan, but we have, I think, five of the soil orders. And this is, Kalkaska would be a spodosol, which was a soil that was formed under forest in coarser textured soils, where there was a lot of leaching of material from humic acids from the soil down through and then deposited in layers in the soil. So that was kind of just in general the process that the Kalkaska sand formed in. In about 1984, I had read an article by, I think it was Jay Hare, who was executive vice president, vice president of the National Wildlife Federation. And he came up with an analogy that kind of keyed my interest in trying to do it. And that was that he said, he compared our relationship with the soil to what a fish's relationship is to the water in which it spends its life. And like the fish and its water, we are surrounded by the soil from the time that we're born, and we're profoundly affected by it each minute of our lives. However, we really aren't very aware of it in most cases, much less do we fully understand its importance or its impact on our lives. We depend on it for food, for shelter. We are even buried in it, but we're unable to gain the essential perspective and distance to understand and appreciate it. And we've been in our culture, as we've moved off the farms, we've become more psychically removed from the soil. And it's at the very time that with climate change and many of the other just pressures on food production and things, we're getting even more of that kind of pressure and potential destruction of the soil resource. So that was kind of what keyed my personal involvement in getting this started.
So what makes Kalkaska unique, and how can we tell, you know, which soil is Kalkaska soil?
Well, it's pretty obvious, and it's probably the easiest way is to look at a profile of it. And the actual background that I had behind me on my picture showed the horizonation and how obvious it is. We were looking at it for educational purposes so that you can see that horizonation very obviously, and then, you know, talk about the whole process of soils forming. And in Michigan, it's a soil that formed in areas, largely in areas that had fairly high snowfall. So a lot of it is kind of along the lakeshore counties in UP, and in coarser textured sand and loamy sand, those types of textures. And it was the process of leaching from the vegetation, the acid, the humic acids would leach iron, aluminum, and humus down into the profile. And you would get a layer that would look almost white sometimes, or gray, very light gray, actually very much like wood ash, that color. In reality, these were just sand grains that had been leached of all the minerals, and then those minerals deposited out in horizons lower down. And between the humus and the iron, aluminum, sesquioxides, it creates this reddish brown to almost black layer, which actually contains a lot of the fertility in the soil. It's a fairly non-fertile soil without that layer. So we were also trying to look at the fact that this was a very fragile soil that could be quite productive for forestry if it were not mishandled and misused. And so that was kind of one of the thrust of establishing it as a soil. But it's very photogenic in terms of, you can see when we're talking about soil horizons, they show up very well. And as you get down, you know, closer to 5 feet, 4 or 5 feet in the soil, you start getting the color of the sand that was slightly yellowish red, pale, much like the material that was originally left by the glaciers and the water running off of the glaciers. And so you can really see the idea that this used to be just like this stuff down at 5 feet, and over the process of anywhere from probably 6,000 to 15,000 years, the soils in Michigan formed, because we have very young soils up here. Wherever the glaciers you know, basically crossed and ground up and redeposited material, it started the whole soil forming process over again. And the glaciers made it down pretty close to the Ohio River. And so the soils north of that still have a lot of nutrients in them compared to the soils south of that. And those soils down there are millions of years old instead of a few thousand. So we, you know, those are all some of the things that led into our selection of the Kalkaska.
So what areas of the state have our state soil?
Well, obviously it was required that it occurred in both lower and upper peninsula. So it's in the top third approximately of the lower peninsula, and then the UP. And it's more of it is towards Lake Michigan side, just because of the part of the, at least the theory now is that the fact that where you had heavier snows and the ground didn't freeze, that the leaching occurred throughout most of the year, even during the winter. And so therefore the soils were more developed than the soils that were further east and didn't have that, weren't in the snow belt. So that's some of what went on. And probably right now at the time, we were looking at it. It was probably in the 500,000-600,000 acres that it occurred on, and now it's probably over a million now that because a lot of the counties had not been mapped yet, especially in the UP. When we started setting it up, there were about 400 soil series mapped in Michigan, and I'm guessing it's probably closer to 700. Now, maybe even a little more than that, because a lot of new soils were set up in the northern part of the state, and especially in the UP when we mapped those counties. So it's you know, fairly extensive, a million acres, and most of it occurs in Michigan, which was again one of the things that we do have control over its correlation as well. So those are the things that went into our selection process.
So why is soil health important? How does it help us?
One of the things that people don't typically realize that the soil is alive. And we've learned a lot more about that in the last 50 years. And we're also realized how much of an impact we can have on that by some of the things we do. Things like the structure of the soil, the pH of the soil, some of the both physical and biological aspects are really important for long-term soil health. And you can't have health without having something that's alive. And that's probably the biggest and most important thing that we all need to realize, is that this soil, it's very complex and it's also extremely fragile. And healthy soil is literally swarming with billions of beneficial organisms, and is in itself, as I said, a very carefully balanced living system. Many of the soils in Michigan have taken thousands of years to develop, and it's really kind of the biophysical underpinning of life for the whole state. It's also taken a very short time to destroy thousands of years of developed soils and many of the things that we've done to the soil, and in many cases damaged beyond economically feasible repair. It's only through raising the level of appreciation and understanding of our soil resource that we're going to be able to ensure that it's continues to be there for both our and future generations. And it's like one of the things I remember the first time I learned it, it's like a cubic inch of healthy soil contains a billion about a billion beneficial creatures. So that's a real important thing. And the big thing that's beginning to happen right now is there's a big focus internationally, but particularly in the U.S. on soil health, and they're looking for indicators of that and having farmers do both consistent checks on these things so that we make sure that we are doing a good job of maintaining the health of the soil. And I'll talk a little bit about the kinds of things, that just a few examples that I know of, and I'm sure there's a lot that I don't. Our farming is largely annual crop. And I think there's probably in the longer term, that's going to change, and annual crops and perennial crops will probably be grown together. Things will be less monoculture and more diverse is one of the things that I think. One of the big changes in agriculture over the last 50 years has been movement towards low tillage and no-till. And that's had a very positive impact on the soil health. It's almost like not what you would think of logically. For instance, plowing was often done because people thought that it would open up the soil, dry it out and earlier so they could get things planted, and that it would also help it hold water. The truth is the micropores and the structure of the soil that's created by the living organisms by not tilling at all, and planting in soil that's basically being tilled by creatures rather than by implements, we're finding out that we're getting much better yields. We're getting much better water holding capacity, and the soil's actually drying out much faster in the spring so they can get them planted sooner. So there's a lot of kinds of things that wouldn't be common sense if you just didn't dig deeper, are actually very much that. So those are some of the kinds of things. I know one of the things that they're doing is they're actually planting, for instance, for an annual crop like corn, they're actually planting between the rows sometime in the late summer, so that they get growing, is planting cover crops. And then there's other situations where, you know, cover crops are being planted or nurse crops, something that actually helps the crop that is being grown and takes out some of the competing weeds that would actually bring down yields. And the other thing is a lot of the lawns, I think that's going to start changing, that we have. We'll have lawns still for areas that are necessary for them, either for, but there's going to be a lot less of them. We'll start planting natives. Planted natives are a big deal. I work as a docent for the Leland Awe Conservancy up here, and one of the projects on one of the preserves, which was basically a cherry farm, and there were a lot of the invasive buckthorn, some of the other invasive honeysuckle and things that had grown along this creek. And the thing about those plants, they're invasive, and there's no natural insects that use them as something that they live on and eat and basically create a biome, a microbiome with. And so because those insects aren't there, there were no longer any trout in this stream. And we went through a project where we just, by removing those invasive non-natives and getting reestablished some of the native shrubs and things along that creek, within a very short time, 2 or 3 years, the trout had repopulated that stream. And that's just an example of the kinds of things that we're looking at with a little deeper dive than we always have in the past.
Carl, thank you so much. This was a wealth of knowledge for those listening. Where can they find out, people listening and want to learn more about Michigan soil, where can they find out more?
There's a lot of really good stuff on the National Resources Conservation Service websites. But if you just Google either soil biology, actually a few years back, the Smithsonian actually had collected soil, we call them soil monoliths, where you actually take the soil out of a face of a pit and in essence glue it to a board, so it still has the structure and the colors and everything. And they did they have a soil display that they put together at the Smithsonian, and collected soils from state soils from all of the states. And so our Kalkaska soil was there. So you might even find some stuff on the Smithsonian site. But there's a lot of really good stuff out, educational stuff. If you just Google soils, even just soil education materials, that kind of thing. There's a ton of stuff out there. Some great books, and a lot of it's under the National Resource Conservation Service, which is part of USDA. The Forest Service has a lot of stuff related to forest soils on there. So yeah, you if you just dig just a little bit, and the soil food web, if you Google soil food web, that'll get you into the whole soil biology and everything we're starting to learn about how important that is. So anyway, those will all be good places.
Carl, thank you so much for coming on and sharing this information. And thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.